Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texit Coin. And right now, today, December 7th, 2025, that Texit Coin is sitting right at $3.02. And I tell you what, they've signed up over 55,000 folks to help. This is a crowdsource project, and they've got over 55,000 miners that are pitching in to mine that Texit coin out there in the great state of Texas. Hey, if you want to get in on this and learn more about it, just shoot an email to texitmines@gmail.com, TEXITMINES@gmail.com. And put the word Palm in there, PALM, to get a discount on that first mining share. All right, thank you, Texit Coin, for sponsoring the show, and let's get right into the show.
Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, folks. Hey, welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We are grateful to be back with y'all again today. And I'm here, as usual, right beside me, the incomparable, incomparable, however you want to say it. But Professor Parlin.
Yes, yeah. Doing good. Got the long sleeves on again.
So I tell you.
It's a wonderful day.
Got a little warm. Had to switch my short sleeves. But
you were working.
I was working. Yeah. I tell you, I'm in the middle of boning out. I don't know. I can't tell you how many deer we killed in Kansas.
Yeah, they got more of them up there. More and they're bigger.
I don't want to incriminate my fellow hunters. But we had
you have a limit up there? They have a limit?
Well, allegedly.
Oh.
So,
same way it is here.
Right. Similarly, you know, you take a Florida cracker up there, they're going to hunt like a Florida cracker, right? You know, so
but
that's
there's no limit I hear on collecting coquinas.
Coquinas, no limit.
No limit.
So that's something we're going to look into. And I just learned about that. And I tell you, our guest today, Douglas, she's going to get us all into this. She might give us a recipe on this coquina soup.
I didn't read up on the recipe in her book.
Right.
Coquina soup.
And so today we're going to get into this new book, Coquina Soup, Collected Stories.
It's got fish bones in it, Steve.
Fish bones. I mean, it's got all the stuff you want. I bet you put some butter in there, some heavy cream.
And I was throwing them things away.
Yeah. But no, we have a great guest today, and we have truly a Florida author with us today, and we're excited to sit down with Frances Neville. Her brand new book is Coquina Soup, which I just held up here. And I'll tell you what, Douglas, this book is already stirring up a lot of conversations across the state. Like you and I, we're already talking about, you know, going and getting these coquinas.
Yes, right.
But anyway, I'll tell you, Frances, here's what I really got out of this book, Douglas, and I encourage everybody, if you're a Floridian, you want to read this book, because what Frances has done, she's
made a book that's cheap and easy to read.
That too. It's short stories, it's easy to read, and you'll get into it immediately. But I tell you what I got into right away was her ability to weave the landscapes of Florida, the feeling, like you can't describe the feeling, right? Of Florida, like Florida man feeling. She weaves it all in there, and immediately within a couple of paragraphs with these stories, you kind of know where it's at.
Right.
Like, okay, this kind of sounds
but
like
she doesn't outright tell you.
She doesn't outright necessarily tell you, but you know,
you kind of know what part
of Florida, or at least in your head, like from your experiences growing up here. You know, five, six, seven generations, you kind of pick up. And so her book really does a great job of that. And it's also intensely personal. I mean, you know, there's a lot of drama in each story that she pulls in there. And the drama matches the landscape.
Right.
You know, Doug, when we get out there in September, there's a lot of drama in our head, right? When we're working and stuff. And she does that. She puts that drama in the characters that matches the landscape. And it all just kind of a gestalt that comes together in each one of these short stories. And I think to me anyway, and I'm speaking personally from my experience reading it, I think all Florida people are going to feel that in each and every story in this book. But with that, let's get Frances on here and let her tell us all about it. And we're thrilled to have her with us. And she's going to talk about the book, or the writing process, maybe a little bit about her motivations, and a little bit about Coquina Soup. So welcome to the podcast, Frances Neville.
Well, thank you. I'm blown away by all the kind things that you just said. I think you summed up exactly what I had hoped the book would do. And I wanted to try to make Florida its own character in a way in the story, in these stories. Not all of them are set in Florida, but most of them are. And everything that you said is really more than anybody could ask for. Who needs awards or anything like that? What you just said is ultimately what I'm striving to do. So thank you. And thanks for having me today.
Yeah, well, we're grateful to have you. As we say, we're glad to have you on here, a true Florida author. I tell you what, just for anybody that hasn't picked up the book yet, obviously Doug and I have dived in and read all the stories, but just give us kind of a quick little synopsis of what would you say the book is about, and how's it arranged? I think, how many stories were there, in it? And are they chronological or anything like that?
No, each story is different. It's a short story collection. Each story is its own characters. It's all fiction. I always have to remind people that it's not. The title is Coquina Soup Collected Stories, and they're not personal stories. They're all fictional stories, fictional characters. I'd say most of the antagonists are predominantly women. There's a few male protagonists in there. The story Mangroves is one that I reference, that it's a male protagonist. And I really was hoping to write short stories where I could practice capturing specific moments and not be so caught up with plot. I wrote a lot of these stories while I was getting my Master's of Fine Arts, my MFA. I got my MFA about 5 years ago. And I went into the MFA program planning to write a novel. And that's what I thought I would do. And about a week into the program, it became so clear to me that I could become a better writer if I pivoted over to short story writing. And the benefit of short stories in terms of when you're going through some type of a program or you're a student is that you're practicing the story arc again and again and again. And so an MFA program is typically 2 years. And I thought by the time this program is finished, I will have been turning in character after character after character. And you're on a rigid schedule. So you're turning in stories literally like every 2 to 3 weeks. And then it's like, bam, now you've got to do a new one, new character, new setting, new motivations, new reason for why you're putting them on the page. And it's rigorous because at the same time, you're also working on your academic path where you're critiquing literature. An MFA is a terminal degree that enables you to be able to teach as well. So you have this academic path and you have a creative path. So you're constantly in the mind of all of these different characters. And I said, if I pivot over to short stories, it's going to be tougher, but I think I'll come out of this a better writer and I'll be more practiced and I'll be workshopping so many more characters and stories and whatnot. And Florida is always central to just about anything I'm interested in writing. So I knew that the state that I love, I'm a fifth generation Floridian, would be part and parcel of just about anything I'm going to write because it's what I love. It's where I was raised. And I think there's just so much more to the state than maybe folks that are visiting see. And I love what they see when they visit because I love everything that brings tourists here. But there's also other parts of the state too that are foundational to who we are, how we live here in the state. And it shapes our worldview. People will say Texas is big sky country. Well, I think Florida's big sky country. I think we got a lot of beautiful blue sky here. And There's nothing like the season that we're in right now, our Florida winter that we're heading into. It's like the best time, I think, to be here. It's stunning. It's gorgeous. And you want to be outside all the time. And so I think all of these things feed into the people that I'm writing about and into where I'm putting them.
So we have a lot of blue sky here, you say.
Yeah.
Let me translate that. We can have some very long dry spells in Florida.
Yeah.
And we're in one right now in this area.
I
noticed reading through your book, it's fiction, but you got to know a little bit about what you're writing about. So tell us about coquina soup, your experience with that. You must have some experience with it.
Well, when I think of coquinas, I think of, well, what they are, the small little shells and everything, the little animal that's in the shell. And I can, you know, I was thinking back to when I was a kid walking along the beach and how they, you'd see them in the sand and whatnot. Part of my heritage is Greek. I have a mom who's part Greek, and coquina soup is popular in Greek cooking. Although I didn't actually grow up having that as a soup, but I was thinking about the shells. I was thinking about how people use them, and I love of seashells. I'm talking to you from my office, but my whole home is filled with shells everywhere. But I put the character in a setting where she's going home to help her mother die, basically. And she sits up one night and she's piddling through things, and she discovers something that opens up kind of a Pandora's box, if you will, of a reality of her mother's life that she just didn't know. And basically everything that she was told was false. And she finds out that there's this, I won't ruin it for other people, but her mother basically had another life. And the soup becomes almost a metaphor, I think, for what we can lose. And at that time when I was writing it, you know, I will disclose my own mother was dying. But my journey was much different than this girl's. But I started to think about the things that I wanted to ask her that she couldn't answer, the things that I wanted to know that she couldn't answer. And there's a scene in the story where she's trying to recreate the soup that her mother make, and she can't cook. She doesn't really know how to do it. And I think that that's something that kind of drove, maybe unintentionally, an undercurrent in the story about we don't always keep everything that we were taught. We can't, her mom and her grandmother and great grandmother had all these traditions and everything. And for whatever reason, good, bad, or ugly, you can't hold on to everything and do something new. Some things have to be let go of, and some things you carry on. It doesn't make you any less of who you are. And that soup kind of became a metaphor, I think, for change and moving into, you know, a new life. And she had to accept. She had to accept there wasn't anything that she could really do. And her mom was going to pass. There's traditions that she knows. There's traditions she wants to share that you know from reading the story. And she just kind of does her best to pass on what she can, but it doesn't make her current life, the life that she knew growing up, it doesn't make it any less wonderful or important. Her mother had to make all these decisions. And so she too, now in her chapter of life, will have to know what's hers and what you throw back. You know, you can't hold on to everything.
But she doesn't know how to cook.
She can't cook.
That's the big problem.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Your stories are very realistic.
I will tell you what. When I was writing that, that soup scene was much longer. Okay. And I workshopped it with a well-known editor that came to visit the program, an editor from New York and worked with one of the big magazines that everybody knows the name of. And he just did not like that. He thought it went on and on too much. He takes off his glasses and he goes, "Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, it does remind me of a story of my own childhood." And he proceeds to tell me this deep, dark family story. I was just shocked. Anyway, I left with the satisfaction of knowing that the subject matter resonated and that what I wrote resonated. But I took his advice and I chopped the scene in half. But it was a little bit more madcap and zany with the soup part of it. And we did trim that down. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I certainly got that from that story. And I thought about it myself in a similar way that Doug and I love, you know, traditions of old Florida cracker. And you look at, you know, our father, our grandfather, each successive generation, we don't bring it all with us. We don't learn all the skills they had, but we learn, you know, here we are on Zoom, and I don't think our grandfather would be doing Zoom, right? So we learn things that are different. But also the other thing in that story, and I don't want to, you know, reveal anything for folks that are going to read the book, but also you mentioned the secret. There's some secrets that her mom had, and she's going to have some secrets too. You know, and we all have that. But I tell you something I wanted to kind of touch a little bit on. All Florida families have a lot of drama. Yeah. And I don't know. I have a previous life where I was married to a woman in Kansas, and it was very much less drama. Much less drama and much less colorful in that Kansas family. I don't think there was any color at all. Maybe that was the problem. But
the deputy sheriff never came out.
Yeah, the sheriff never came to the house. It just, you know, at first
you
I liked
who
it.
The sheriff was.
I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't even know where to. I didn't
know
where
what the cars looked like.
I didn't know where the courthouse was. Never had to go to the courthouse. So. At first, I liked that. I was like, wow, this is great, right? This is great. But then pretty soon, I got bored, right? Because, you know, I'm like, well, what do y'all people do to stir things up? But how do you think, I mean, each one of your stories, you've got that element. You've got that drama. Is either a lover scorned or there's something with a parent or all of those in every story. And again, to me, that really reflected the environment of Florida, both the natural environment. You did a great job, but you've also managed to catch those relationship things. What experiences, and you don't have to share anything personal, certainly, but what experiences and what places growing up kind of helped you with that colorful drama and environment that you include in every story?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question, and I feel like I could talk about that for hours. I grew up in the country. I grew up in a real rural part of Florida. So I say I'm from Dade City, Florida, but I'm really from an unincorporated part outside of Dade City called Blanton. And Blanton was rural. It was hilly. We were outside all the time. We were considered, when growing up in Blanton, where we were, and that's where my mom's side of the family, her mother's side of the family was all from. We were outside all the time. So there you go. You're open to drama. You're open to woods and orange groves and bugs and rain and playing in the dirt and making mud pies. And you're engaging in all of the elements. You never know when some random wild dog might just wander into the yard. Snakes. You never know when you're going to encounter snakes. Mm-hmm. Bees. You know, like you're from a kid, you're outside and you're always dealing with the elements that are Florida and our heat. I mean, our heat to me can't really ever not be kind of a character, I think, in its own way. Like people come here and they're just taken by the heat of Florida, but we adapt and we live with it. I tell people we're swamp dwellers down here in Florida. We're used to the elements of the sun, of the rain, of the heat, of impending storms, sometimes, you know, hurricanes, whatnot. We venture out into streams and lakes and rivers, and there's alligators everywhere and moccasins. And, you know, this is just part and parcel. And you accept it. You learn to adapt to it. I would say that I've lived all over the state as well. I mean, I've lived in South Florida. I've lived in the Panhandle. I've lived in Central Florida. So I've spent a lot of time in Florida cities, in the rural parts of Florida. So I've encountered different people, different situations. The topography of the state is, you know, dramatically different when you're, you know, up in the Panhandle versus down when you get into the Keys. I mean, it is amazing to me how diverse Florida is in terms of just our topography. There's stories everywhere you go. You can't help but trip over a story in Florida. I also had, I will say this, when you referenced the drama, one of my writing teachers has a great TED Talk, and I can't remember the title of it, but I can send it to you if you want to put it in your show notes later. But, you know, he says in the talk, only trouble is interesting. Okay. Only trouble is interesting. So you have to put your character in the face of trouble, and there has to be stakes, you know, there has to be stakes high enough that the reader is going to care to want to follow and see what happens. And I think going back, that was one of the benefits of pivoting over to short story writing, is that I had to experiment with, well, what's the trouble they're going to face? What's the trouble? And so the trouble, you know, I could just insert different scenarios and kind of decide, you know, is this going to, you know, you start writing and you go, is this working? Is it not working? But that has never left me. Only trouble is interesting. And that has to be in the writing. Otherwise, you don't have a story. Like, there's no story there. There's no conflict.
I think you just very well summed up how I kind of threw this question at you of the difference between Kansas and Florida. Mm-hmm. We don't need to write a lot of stories about Kansas. you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to find a lot of short stories about Kansas. But Florida, we've got plenty to write about, plenty of drama, plenty of a variety of habitats and environments and landscapes, and such a diverse culture that's been together for hundreds of years right here on this peninsula. And again, I think you did a great job of describing that, and you've experienced it. You've lived in lots of different places. Let me ask you one more story. Let's touch on one more of them, and then we'll wrap it up, because we could go on all day, because all of these are superb. But the story, the last one in the book, Rules of Stars and Ash, I tell you, that spoke to me, because all of us have had somebody kind of help us out along the way. We like to say, well, you know, I bootstrapped, I made it through, and I'm lived a great life or whatever. Or I've written a book, right, or whatever. But this story really kind of hit me, because there's always somebody that we didn't think about that came along at the right time and helped us out, and it certainly did in this story. And also, the main character is coming from a place where she moved a lot. And I couldn't, this is one of the stories in the book, I couldn't tell exactly where it was. I will say that on this story, couldn't ever say exactly where it took place, but it sounded like a Florida experience, because her family life, would be stable, and then without any warning, unstable. To me, that's Florida. Like, things can be going great. We can have a blue sky for 5 months. No rain, everything's beautiful, and then boom, right? With no warning, it changes. So all of that kind of happened in that story. But again, talk a little bit about that story, and about, you know, the fact that there's somebody maybe that's going to help you along the way, and maybe relate that to that story for us, how you came up with that.
Well, thank you. And You're right. We, and anybody who's been out on a boat will know, boom, anything can happen. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. you're out on the water and you thought it was going to be a sunny day. And then now you're finding out how good of a navigator you really are once a storm, you know, starts headed your way. But that story, and I applaud you because that's the ending story. So you read the whole book. The beginning story and the ending story, I think, are the two most emotional stories. And that story in particular is, it's a coming of age. It is emotional. I had one professor say that they just thought too much was happening to the character. They just didn't believe that those many things could happen. I thought, well, you just don't know the people I know. I mean,
he was probably from Kansas.
Maybe. I thought, really? Because I know very few people where it's just been, you know, just a linear, easy path. But that story was actually much longer and I had much more going on. And that story was actually the story I came in to write the novel. So I turned that novel into a short story and I still will revisit that as a novel. But the character that is kind of the person that throws her a bone, if you will, that sees that, you know, she needs a parent, you know, there's potential here. Yeah. I think that we're really blessed when we have that person that might, you know, I apologize there. That went off. When we have somebody that sees, hey, you've got something and I'm not going to let that get thrown to the dogs. You know, you've got a skill or you've got, or it could be a fleeting moment. I mean, in the story, the help that she gets, sustains for, you know, a decent amount of time. But sometimes it can be something really, really small. It can be just a moment. It can be you made an introduction. You picked up the phone for somebody. These things can be life-changing. And for Chevy, which is the name of the character in that story. And I love that character. And I've had people say the exact same thing that you just said after they read it is that it resonated with them, that they had somebody in their life that kind of stepped in or from afar could see what was happening. And I love that character. And I love that had I continued on and made it into a novel that she will prevail, you know, that as long as she knows that she has the value, then she can prevail. And that was probably one of my favorite stories to write.
Yeah, that was a great one. And so let's shift gears now. So you got your book out. Where can folks find the book? So tell us a little bit about that. Where can they find you? And if you want them to, and also what's the future hold? What are you working on now? So all of those as we wrap up, if you can.
Sure thing. Well, you can go to Amazon. It's on, if you Google it, my name, Frances Neville, Coquina Soup, it pops up on a number of different sites. The publisher has it available on different sites, and Amazon is one of those. You can follow me on Instagram, and on Instagram, my handle is It's Florida Y'all, and that ITS in the beginning is important. It's Florida Y'all, because there's another one out there who's pretending to be me. It's not me. It's Florida Y'all, and my website, francisneville.com. You can always email me there. And right now I am working on a novel, and it is, surprise, set in Florida. And I'm also working on a nonfiction project, which I can't talk about, but I'm super excited about. But I will say that it's about Florida, and it's puts a spotlight on somebody who's a favorite to many people. I'll just say that.
All right. So a book coming up on Lynyrd Skynyrd. Leonard Skinner and Tim Tebow. All right. Hey, Francis Neville, we are so grateful to have you here on the podcast today. And I'll tell you, we're just grateful that you're doing such a masterful job of communicating that intangible, and that is Florida. That is so hard. I could stumble and stumble and stumble to try to describe where we grew up, what it's like, what the habitat's like, the environment and the people, and you have done it in short story form and weaved it together, and we're grateful for you communicating that. And so everybody go get the book, we're just grateful to have you, and we're going to keep watching and see what you come up with next. We're anxious to see.
Well, I thank you both, and wow, again, that just means so much to me. You just made my day, and that's honestly, that's all I was trying to do, was write about the state that I love.
Well, you're doing a great job, and keep it up. We're grateful. All right. That's it for today, folks. And y'all keep it Florida.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025. Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.